Salon boss. I mean, linoleum knife.
A podcast of the I'm here, I'm queer, my joint pain is moderate to severe.
What's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
The man who needs the salon boss.
You're Dave White.
The man who shops for the salon boss.
The man who's way past salon boss at this point.
What do you mean?
You shrug them off.
Yeah.
They can't make a dent.
They can't make a dent in the amount of physical torment afflicting my body. You have adorable little shoulder pains.
I see.
Yeah. Me.
Don't patronize me.
Listen. real men.
Fine. Anyway, we're film critics, we're married. And we ache.
Oh, and we got. Can I just tell everybody our great fortune?
Sure.
Okay, so you know the pandemic, in terms of how we buy groceries, is not over. Still buying groceries, having them delivered, the cost benefits of this, including healthy tipping.
Yes. Always.
Still means having groceries delivered is less expensive than just going from grocery store to grocery store.
Right.
Looking for stuff because I buy in large quantities. We've discussed this so many times. But every once in a while, in the grocery delivery, there's a nice surprise. A thing you didn't know was coming. And today, it's a box of Lil Yachty's Reese's Puffs.
How are they different from regular Reese's Puffs, Dave?
Lil Yachty's on the box.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's all that matters to me. Because look, I mean, I'm showing, look
is
at
that
this.
Like buying a
look how
for the
happy
toy
he
it?
Is to be eating Reese's Puffs on the well, cover of this box.
Who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't be?
Like most Reese's of the time Puffs. When celebrities do their own, like get their face on a cereal
sure.
box, they're like,
it's very posed.
It's very posed and tasteful. And his
Lil Yachty is digging in.
His mouth is wide open. He is digging into Reese's Puffs.
I see his tongue.
And the joy, yeah, his tongue is on the box. The joy he is experiencing with this cereal. Oh, man. I just looked at the back.
Oh, here we go.
Collect all four boxes to complete the Lil Yachty eating Reese's Puffs poster.
So you're going to be putting in a grocery delivery and special notes. Check the back
check
of the
back
box
of the
and make
I
sure
need,
it's not one I already have.
I need the one with his hand.
The lower
next
torso
time,
of
and the actual bowl.
I'm also looking at the back of a box of Raisin Bran.
You told me that you were headed to Target this week to look for the gay cereal.
I was, yes.
So when you get there,
I'll look for the other Yachty.
Look for the other
three
Yachty, because this
is like when you collected wacky packs. You need the whole.
You know what? This is as close as we have gotten in our lifetime to the little cardboard record on the cereal box that happened when you and I were very small.
Yes,
children.
Early 70s.
Yeah. I'm stoked for this. First of all, not only do we get to have Reese's Puffs,
yes, we get to enjoy them with Lil Yachty,
and we get to enjoy them with Lil Yachty. There's like Polaroid photos on the side of the box of him super enjoying the Reese's Puffs even more than the way he's enjoying it on the... This is the best box of cereal I've ever bought in my life.
And you haven't even opened it yet.
And I didn't even know it was on the way. Mm.
You just thought you were getting quotidian Reese's Puffs. Not
this
special
is, this
signature
is...
Lil Yachty. I'm looking at the back of a Raisin Bran box. It says, "Did you know?" But the K in "no" is
today
the
was
Kellogg's
the cereal
K.
delivery day. By so the way, that's why
it's bananas.
That's why there are lots of boxes of cereal sitting on the podcasting desk.
Yes, this will get us through the next 6 months. Don't get us wrong. It's not like we just subsist on this stuff,
right?
It just makes our life better.
But I need those other three Liliotti.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll keep an eye out.
The hunt is on now.
Gotta get them all.
Gotta get them all.
Tell us about your art collection, Dave. Well, I recently acquired all four pieces of the Lil Yachty poster.
I super dig him. Remember the Target ad he did with Carly Rae Jepsen?
That's kind of the extent of my knowledge of his career is the Target ad with Carly Rae Jepsen.
He's a delight.
Great.
Yeah.
Hey, look, anybody who likes Reese's Puffs, that they get a... That's a big boost in my book. So.
All right, so cinema.
Sure.
We have five films to talk about.
Okay.
I saw A Quiet Place 2, finally.
Oh, okay.
I know we talked about it last week.
We did.
But I told you also that I would come and let you know.
Okay.
If you were right or wrong.
Oh, great. How'd I do?
You're right.
Do you know?
I totally enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
Even though I went to this film with a wild card guest, friend and neighbor, Gary Cotti.
Yes.
How do we explain his behavior in cinemas?
Well, he's the total antithesis of you when it comes to the jump scare. It is well established.
Okay, there is that. I don't mean just horror films in general. I mean in general.
He does not want to save an idea to tell you later.
That's true. Now, I have broken him of that.
Oh, okay.
In other genres of film. Mm. Like, the last time he spoke to me in a movie, even though we go to the movies a lot together, the last time he spoke to me in the movie was when I took him to see Hu Xiaoxian's The Assassin.
Which, come on.
And he leaned in halfway through and whispered to me very, very quietly, because the film is
very quiet.
Very quiet. "I have no idea what's going on. I'm losing my mind."
I'm sure he was not alone in that.
And I looked at him, and I did not respond. I just held up my finger as if to say, "Wait, when the film is over,
it will be even more confusing.
We'll have this conversation." No, it's not a confusing movie.
No, but it's...
Anyway,
it's opaque.
I'm generally able to... He can speak in a normal room tone of voice to me in a movie theater, mm-hmm. and I will pretend he did not speak to me. I will just keep looking at the screen. I will not even turn my head to acknowledge that he has spoken to me. And that is how I have broken him of this situation. Having said that, and he's going to listen to this and be like, "I need to come on and do a rebuttal." Like, I know
how
that's,
dare you?
I know that's coming. In the trailers, all bets are off. Like, I don't care if he yells or talks back to the trailer or points at an actor and says, "I worked with that guy. He was very cool."
Yeah.
And I think, that's nice. Tell me about it later. But in horror movies, all bets are off. And I had forgotten something. I forgot that he went to see the first Quiet Place with me.
Yeah, well, the three of us went.
And could not control his reactions, because there were some jump scares in that movie, and he yells at a jump scare, and also he does that thing that characters in the Peanuts cartoons do when someone yells at them. They spin around in a circle in midair.
And their hair stands up on it.
That's what happens to him. So when Quiet Place 2 came along, he said, "Ooh, let's go." I said, "I'm bringing you." "No, I'm not going to do, you can't handle it and be quiet." And he said, "I did the first time." He said, well, first of all, I'd forgotten that he had been there the first time, but I then remembered, oh, no, he did not the first time.
I remember that movie, like, he and I both sort of clamping our hands over our mouths during the suspenseful moments.
We've established that I do not really generally respond to jump scares. Mm-hmm. You've got to really trick me, because otherwise it's kind of clear when they're about to show up in the film. And so we get into the movie, and the theater is 25% capacity, and then it's sold out, right?
Yeah.
So we're down front, like close to the screen. And he said, I'm going to show you that I can be a quiet person in A Quiet Place too. And you know what? He did it. Now, he still spun around in the air during the jump scares.
Sure.
But he didn't yell.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You're allowed to yell in a horror movie.
But not at the Quiet Place movie.
No, you're allowed. Mm. If when the jump scare comes, you're allowed to yell.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something about every time I saw the first with you guys on opening night. I went to a press screen for the second one. But there's something. They create this sort of sacrosanct mood where, like, you just don't want to make a sound because you're so identifying with the characters who also can't make
I think
sound.
In a horror movie, you're allowed to yell. It's just that when friend and neighbor Gary Cotta yelled, everyone knows.
Sure. When Kong die, everybody cries.
He's one of our closest friends. I love him very much.
Yes.
He's very loud in movies, especially horror movies. So that's the story. The film itself.
Yes.
Without going into what happens, jump scares that I saw coming for the most part, a couple that made me flinch.
Good.
And suspenseful.
Yeah.
The inclusion of a famous actor 2/3 of the way through the movie made me think, oh, you're going to die in just a moment. I won't tell you if I was right or wrong. And then the ending. It's a really cool ending.
Yeah. Like I said, I think they figure out a way to sort of expand the world just enough.
Right.
Without going too bananas with it.
Right. And what keeps it moving in between the scary monsters parts is the way that the film, I feel very skillfully, builds. Well, first, I've already built these characters in the first film, but you even go a little deeper into it with who they are, how they communicate, and what they're able to do without speaking.
Right.
With ASL, with just face. The kids in particular are terrific actors. And I'm into this. And if there's a third part, I'm right there.
Sure, yeah.
I would like it to wrap up eventually finite way, finite might be the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
It definitive.
Thank you, definitive.
It ends in a way in which you could stop here and it would still feel, I think, fairly dramatically satisfying.
I agree.
But you could also give us that final chapter and take it all the way to the finish line.
Right.
And that too could be
a trilogy. I don't mind a trilogy.
Sure. Beyond that,
if you are not the Fast and the Furious, do not keep going, please.
Beyond that, it would have to be like Fear the Walking Dead, where it's like, here's what's happening on a whole other part of the planet.
Right. You want to make it a TV show where everyone has to be quiet all the time?
Continent hop,
If they didn't land on Well, I can't say.
No,
I can't say.
I did a thing that I was reading about online recently, and I think this is a, I think Paramount did drop the ball because these movies, I think, have such inherent appeal to deaf audiences.
Yes.
This movie should be going out with subtitles for what little dialogue there is.
Yeah, didn't Sound of Metal? The entire film was subtitled.
Yeah,
wrong.
Exactly. They should do it like that because they do subtitle the ASL for non-ASL speakers, but there are parts where hearing people speak or whisper English to each other,
right,
and that isn't being subtitled for hard of hearing audiences or for deaf audiences, and they should.
Huh. I had not considered that, but you're right. I now remember that they did that for The Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
For as many people who saw that film.
Well, it was on Amazon Prime, and it got some Oscar action.
Right.
I think people saw it. Some people saw it. So, yeah, get on it, Paramount.
While we're on the horror tip here. The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It.
Well, I love the film critic on Twitter.
What comedian's tagline was that?
Was it like Flip Wilson?
Wasn't it Flip Wilson back in the day?
I think so, yeah. Like, somebody was like, how is this not a Mel Brooks parody of this series?
Dead and loving it.
Exactly. Like, this is genuinely the title of this movie.
Conjuring and loving it.
Men in Tights.
Please explain The Conjuring.
Okay.
I'll just say this, I've pretty much given up on this franchise. I don't care enough about it anymore to see the films. The Annabelle creation movies were not my thing.
It's a mixed bag for me. The
early
first,
on, they were fine.
The first two Conjurings are good.
Then there was The Nun, and that was part of that whole extended.
Yes, and La Llorona, The Curse of La Llorona. Yeah. Yeah, I think the first two Conjurings are good. I think the second and third Annabelles are good. But first Annabelle, Nun, La Llorona, not great. Also not great. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. All right. So basically, it's another wacky adventure with the Warrens.
Yeah.
And their demon chasing abilities. It's this case in New England where a little kid was possessed. They tried to do an exorcism.
Can you say that in quotes, please? Possessed. Can we just put the word possessed always in quotes?
Look, I'm saying this is the plot of the movie. I'm not saying this is a real thing that ever happened because I think it's nonsense.
Well, because they always say, well, these are based on true stories. And,
the Warrens are...
We know.
Google Ed and Lorraine Warren and the word, like, fraud or charlatan.
You know, everybody,
and
you'll
get a
point,
full day on Google.
At this point, everybody knows that they were not the people they claimed
to be.
Is this not... common knowledge.
I think a lot of people know that, but they've built an entire movie franchise based on the premise that they were.
You can do that all day, but I mean, we don't all think, ooh, this really happened to these people.
I'm sure P.T. Barnum would tell you why there are a lot of people out there who totally buy into this whole thing.
Yeah.
These are basically faith-based superhero movies.
Right.
Which in the first two didn't bother me so much because they were genuinely scary and atmospheric and, you know, like, yeah, maybe they were jump scares, but they were good jump scares. And,
right.
and so I thought they were good. And I will say, even in this one, Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga buy it and sell it, you know,
of
like
course.
They are completely,
well, they're both really good actors.
Yes. They're really good actors and they are immersed in this thing and they make you believe in this thing that is complete nonsense. So they are doing an exorcism in quotes for a possessed in quotes child. Mm-hmm. Ed has a heart attack in the middle of it. And Lorraine is having these visions of things because apparently, I don't know if they played it up as much in the earlier films, but in this one a lot, she like touches things and she has visions and she's there. And so while the two of them are distracted, the boyfriend of the older sister of the possessed child.
Run that one by me again.
The boyfriend
of the older sister of the possessed child. All right.
Basically tells the devil, look, get out of the kid's body and possess me.
Where are you taking me, devil? Devil's in my car now.
So devil says yes. And computer says no, but devil says yes. Leaves the kid.
Devil says, LOL, okay.
Exactly. leaves the kid's body, goes into the boyfriend's body. Not long after that, the boyfriend isn't like always possessed, but he has these moments of twitchiness. And then he like stabs a guy a bunch of times.
Twitchy?
Yeah.
Ain't possessed.
Well, but then later he stabs a guy 22 times. So that's, we count that as possessed.
All right, fine.
And so now the Warrens are trying to prove that he is possessed to reduce his sentence or clear him of this crime. So it's this kind of a courtroom drama, kind of an investigative thing where they're like, they're trying to track down this other case where these, and the other case at least gives you the one moment of like kind of queer subtext for these films, because it's these two high school girls who were close friends.
Right.
And you know, like one of them's, they're out in the woods.
Doing
in the
a little conjuring.
One of them gives the other one like a friendship bracelet. Yeah. No, they're not doing anything, but they somehow encounter. I forget how the devil enters into this, but he does.
Okay.
Anyway, I was just kind of bored, and I will defend the first and even second Conjuring movies. This one was just a drag.
Any horror movie with possession that needs a religious authority to come fix it.
Yes. The priests don't do so much in this movie, but the Warrens are hardcore Catholic, and that's at the base of their thing. Oh, I forgot to tell you. When the priest shows up at the beginning of the movie, when they're doing the exorcism of the little kid, they totally do the exorcist shot of the guy looking out the window
down to the
street lamp, and then the car pulling
away. I was in
the
living room when you were walking.
Yeah, and
it
was like, ooh, Conjuring.
Nice,
you,
nice
that's,
shot.
Yikes. Come on.
You
come
know what?
On.
They're tipping their hat to
clearly.
To the king.
Yes.
You might take the exorcist's name out of your mouth.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. Like of this movie, no.
Yeah, go on.
If you're going to see this movie, see it for the blouses.
Oh, yeah.
Because
Vera
Farmiga wears an array of 1981 frilly-necked, poofy-sleeved...
Rodarte Spring Summer 2021.
Exactly. Dave says these are back now, apparently, that are bananas. And, of course, then when you see the clips of the real Warrens at the end, apparently the real Lorraine Warren... Big fan of.
She liked an ornate blouse.
She liked a high, complicated architectural collar.
If and I were going to watch this movie, I'm not.
No,
I would. That's why I would look at it.
Yeah, and I said on Twitter, I need some like fashion blogger or horror blogger or horror fashion blogger or somebody to give me a ranking list of Conjuring blouses.
I think the question I really want answered is, why don't the Catholics and the evangelicals and everybody else who want you to believe that the devil can, you know, get up inside of you and take you over, why don't they have a consistent set of rules in place so that the films at least don't feel like someone just sat down and said, you know what I think should happen here? This. And
why isn't there more scientific method to this? Is that what you're saying?
Why isn't there more consistency across the board? Why don't the churches get together and say, you know what, Hollywood?
These are the rules.
These are the actual rules. We're the experts here. We've really done this in real life.
Team.
Wink, wink. But like, why don't...
I mainly question...
Because no one's out here believing that this is going to be fixed or is even real if one movie tells you one thing and another movie tells you another thing.
I mainly question the devil's logic in possessing these, like, children or, you know, Italian peasants or something. A, what's the end game there?
Yeah,
what are you
like,
accomplishing? B.
What's in it for the devil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
B. The whole point of the devil and evil in general is to be slick and charming and catch you off guard and seductive and all of that stuff. What is a small child foaming at the mouth and cracking his bones on a kitchen table doing for the devil's overall agenda?
Right. If you're the devil and you've got a marketing campaign going on.
winter quarter 2022.
Twisting a 9-year-old inside out is not really how you win people to your side.
Like, show me a movie where the devil takes over the head of a television network. You know, like...
Or a president.
Or, well, the dead zone is kind of that, you know. But yeah, like, I don't get what the point is and why the manifestations are so, like, gross and obvious. If the devil should be smart enough that if he's going to possess a human being, he's going to turn that human being into somebody who's real charismatic, like, oh, I don't know, a megachurch pastor, for instance.
Yes.
As opposed to somebody who is literally, like, you know, snarling, growling, and bubbling at the mouth.
Right.
Anyway, don't bother with The Conjuring. Colin, the devil made me do it. It's not very interesting.
We'll get to this later.
Okay.
We both saw Riders of Justice.
Yes, finally.
It took me a while to get to see it. There were complications.
Yes.
But I did. It stars Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes.
This is a Danish film.
Yes.
Mads Mikkelsen.
I think it's Mass, actually.
Pardon me?
I've been told the D is silent.
How do you say his name?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mass?
Yeah.
Can we get confirmation from the one person we know who actually knows him personally?
I will ask.
Great. Why don't you do that?
Friend of the show, Brian Fuller. He's been on the program. We're not being coy.
Yeah, you're right. We're not. Okay. Anyway. Where was I? Well, I was telling you about what this movie is about.
Yes.
I'm going to keep calling him Mads.
Okay.
Because that's how it's spelled, and I'm an American.
And you're mad about Mads.
After this film, for sure, yeah. He's a soldier. And he's away from home. He calls his wife to tell her, you know, I thought I was going to be able to come home for Christmas, but they're keeping me here. The wife is upset about this, so is the daughter. On top of everything else, the daughter's bicycle was just stolen. They decide to have a fun day in the city.
Yes.
We're taking the day off. Everything sucks. We're going to go have fun in the city. They take the train in, have a great day, take the train home. On the way home, on the train, there is a horrible train accident, and the mother is killed. Also on the train is a statistics expert.
An algorithm guy.
And he is convinced that there's something more going on than an accident. Because of some things that he has seen on the train and some things that he knows about high-profile court case going on in the world. He contacts his two closest hacker statistics, probability, mathematics.
IT goons.
IT nerd pals. They go to the cops. They say, look, here's the weird circumstances surrounding this.
The probability defying.
This cannot be a coincidence. Something is wrong here. You must investigate. The cops say no. They go to Mads Mikkelsen, who has come home in the wake of his wife's death. They lay out their case to him and they say, this is what we think happened. Will you help us solve this? Mads Mikkelsen is an expert at killing people, and he says, oh, yeah. Yeah, let's get it. Let's do this. What I have just explained to you might not sound comedic, but I am here to tell you that quite a bit of this movie is actually very funny.
This is a movie that tone shifts with such expert skill.
Yeah.
It is moving. It is a drama about a family falling apart and trying to build its way back together again. It is a character-based comedy.
Yeah.
It is an action movie.
Yes.
It is a movie about the chaos and randomness of all existence.
Yeah.
And it's a Christmas movie.
It takes place at Christmas. As I sat watching it, and as they assemble, not just the four of them, but they assemble this makeshift team of people who are going to participate in the
investigation
/ revenge, you start to feel like it's the Mighty Ducks of killing.
They are a ragtag band of outsiders.
They really are. And I think it's such a great sort of, I almost want to call it like a caper, because you're putting things, they're not committing, well, they are committing crimes. They are committing crimes. The steps involved and the interlocking qualities that are necessary to make their actions happen.
Yeah.
The editing and the care that is being taken with character detail and, you know, events unfolding upon events and twists that you do not see coming.
Oh, yeah.
And that surprise you and are not for one second cheap feeling.
Nope. This is directed by Anders Thomas Jensen, who has worked with Mr. Mikkelsen on various films, including Men and Chickens a few years back.
Uh-huh.
And this is a movie that we kept getting emails about, and the title is terrible.
Yeah, well, as I said earlier, it sounds like an 80s Brat Pack Western.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like, and then Matt Atchity, bless him, was like, no. You have to see this. He made Christy and me watch this movie.
And even that didn't convince me.
And it blew our minds. And then I had to nag you to watch it.
Right.
But it's great. So, like, it's hard to explain or describe this movie without getting too far into the weeds, and part of the weeds are the part of the fun here.
Yeah. The plot details unfolding is absolutely part of them.
Yeah. Great ending.
It's violent as hell.
That too.
So be aware of that before you watch it.
But this is one of my favorite movies of this year, and I really want people to see it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So thank you for pushing it on me.
You're welcome.
Because, I mean, really, how often do I listen to you?
Not nearly enough. But I knew it was...
Same goes for you, by
this is
the
also
way.
True. Yeah. Look, it was violent, and there's a whole subplot about a French horn, so I thought Dave White has to see this.
Well, you know, as the fourth chair of four French horns in my high school...
They had to put in four chairs.
They had to... Yeah. I can say that this is a French horn enthusiast's, film.
Yes. This is your time to shine.
All right. Christian Petzold has a new film.
Yes.
Christian Petzold, a German filmmaker. Really like him a lot. Phoenix, Transit. Incredible film, Transit, from a couple years back. This is called Undina. Mm-hmm. Stars Paula Beer and Franz Rogowski, who were both in Transit. They were the couple in Transit.
Right.
Now they are the couple in this movie. It is by no means a sequel. It is a completely different story. Just the same actors. So Paula Beer plays Undina. She is an urban development expert. She lectures in Berlin about architecture and how it relates to the troubled past of the city of Berlin. Also, she has a little bit of a secret. She is the actual Undina of European myth. Now, if you remember a few years back, there was an Irish film starring Colin Farrell that was called Ondine.
Yes, from Neil Jordan.
And this is... We're talking about the same character. Undina is the European mythological mermaid, water spirit, whose fabled existence involves having to kill any man who betrays her love. Perhaps you have seen a Disney animated musical feature entitled The Little Mermaid, and that is the children's happy, nice version of this difficult and dark story.
Now, I don't recall the Neil Jordan movie being so much about killing
men,
but I could see where that's where Petzold would really stake his claim.
Yeah, exactly. So we start the film. Undina is being broken up with by her boyfriend, a guy named Johan, and she's messed up over it. She's crying. But also, while she's crying, she says in this very, matter-of-fact way, you have to die now. And he's like, could you just cut the crap? Like,
who hasn't said that during a breakup?
Right. He has never bought her, story.
Right.
But before she can do anything about it, in comes Franz Rogowski. Turns out that he is an industrial diver. And in the same sort of analogous way that her lectures on the architecture of Berlin and how, the stories you tell yourself about a city, a state, a country, the stories that the population tells itself and how those stories are reflected in the buildings they make, the mountains they cut open to make freeways, or... the people they commit genocide with to,
upon
clear the land or whatever. As she explains that stuff to people above ground, even though she is a mermaid,
right?
He routinely goes underwater to repair turbines and structural underpinnings of actual Berlin. We learn that the name Berlin is a word that means built on a marsh.
And he's doing all that while
being dutifully
a surface dweller who's underneath.
Yeah, he very dutifully is one of the people who keeps it all running. When they meet for the first time, as he just walks up to her at the cafe, they walk in, an aquarium that's in the cafe shatters, douses them, broken glass is on her, he's got to remove the glass, So their meeting is sort of a bit of foreshadowing. Stuff is coming. You don't know exactly what.
Right. Primal forces of nature are at work
here. I'm not going to give away where this goes or what happens.
Okay.
But it is simultaneously a romantic drama and a story about historical trauma. I didn't mean to make that rhyme. I just accidentally did that.
Sure.
Petzold is this kind of director who loves noir and loves, old Hollywood style of filmmaking. And this absolutely has the feeling of a noir where you hope they're not a doomed couple.
Right.
But in your gut, you kind of know.
You are watching a German movie.
Things aren't going to go really well for anybody.
Right.
Paula Beer and Franz Rogowski are... I know why he keeps casting them. They're so perfectly adept at this. Mm. They both have faces that communicate an old-fashioned romantic yearning. Mm. He is the puppy dog face. He moons for her through the entire film. And one of the things I love about this film is that even though you kind of have, as I said, in your gut, the sense that this might not work out exactly happily, you feel like Petzold is on their side. Hmm. He wants something good to happen to them. And then maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't. ultimately, it's a story about, can you fix history in a way that, you know, once you've set up a story about yourself,
right?
Once you've embodied a myth, are you
trapped in it?
Are you trapped in it? Maybe. I love this.
Okay.
I think this is great. I'm a fan of this guy. I think his films are very cool, and every time he's got a new one, I'm ready for it.
I need to catch up. I was not crazy about Transit. I know everybody loved that one.
But why are you wrong?
It's my life. Phoenix sounds real interesting, though, so I want to see that one. Is Paula Beer in that one, too?
I forget. Phoenix is fun. In a
twisted way.
Twisted way, yeah. You watched The Disciple.
Yes.
I did not. Are you ready to talk about that?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is a film that kind of kind of popped up on Netflix without a lot of fanfare, which Netflix is known to do with their like international acquisitions, unless it's something like Roma, you know, where they're making a big to-do about it. A lot of these movies just kind of slip in, and, you know, if you are not somebody who is routinely watching films from India on Netflix, which they actually have quite a few.
They have a lot, yeah.
Then you may well not even know this movie is around. But it had played at Venice, it played at Toronto, so there were a lot of critics who were fans of it. Alfonso Cuarón is an executive producer. And so it is a movie that takes place over the course of about 15 years. Of this guy who is trying to learn this very specific kind of classical Indian. They call it raga in the film, and I don't know if it's the same as what, like, I've heard that term bandied around the United States, and I don't know if that's the same thing. But it's this, they perform quite a bit of it over the course of the film, so you get a feel for what it is. Although, if you are a Westerner like me, you are very likely to not necessarily know the niceties that separate a, you know, mediocre singer from a great singer.
Yeah, there are nuances that you can't understand.
It's a totally different, you know, diatonic scale. I don't even know the music terminology here, but it's just, you know, my ear does not know the difference.
Right.
But what the movie is telling you, and I think does in a really interesting way, it's about the notion of striving for perfection and allowing art to sort of, the pursuit of that perfection in art to consume the artist. And at what point does the artist sort of step back and acknowledge that there are other things in the world, that there are other things to be accomplished in one's life?
Uh-huh.
Now that I'm saying this out loud, it's not unlike Black Swan in that way, although it's a completely different style of storytelling.
Right.
But it is about that sort of drive to like achieve this goal,
perfection, you know, in your work.
Yeah. You know, the lead is played by Aditya Modak, who is a singer in India. I think this is like one of his first acting roles. And the character ages from about, like, I don't know, 25 to 40 in that neighborhood.
Okay.
And apart from a mustache that emerges about midway through the film, beyond that, there's not a lot of obvious
aging going on,
but he really conveys the passage of time in this character.
Right.
Who he is at the end of the film is so much different than who he is at the beginning of the film. I did find it a little slow going, and that might just be me. That might be my relative ignorance of how Indian cinema is paced in certain ways. I know that obviously this does not fall in the category of like, this is not a Bollywood movie that's a 4-hour, you know, musical or whatever. This is a drama with a lot of music in it. And so, you know, you might find it rough going, or I think if, you know, if you can sink into it, if you can go with the rhythms that it's establishing, obviously a lot of critics around the world have really loved it. It's won a lot of awards.
Okay.
It's worth checking out. And it's, you know, like I said, buried deep in your Amazon somewhere or in your Netflix without getting a lot of hype. I just got a text from Mr. Fuller. It is Maz.
Say it again.
He wrote, it's pronounced M-A-Z. Maz.
Maz.
Maz Mikkelsen.
Maz.
So,
tell him I say hey.
An expert knows.
We worked it out live on the mic.
That's right. We go to the source.
Do you have a DVD or streaming pick of the week?
I do.
What is it?
There's a new Blu-ray of MacGruber.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to watch MacGruber again ever since watching Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
Yeah.
They feel of a piece.
I'm gonna throw my hat in with this one.
Okay.
We collectively agree. MacGruber.
MacGruber.
Now watch. We're gonna go back and watch it and be like, oh my, that's oh no no no,
that hasn't aged well.
That hasn't aged well. Yeah.
We haven't looked at it again, but
right.
Based on our memories.
It'll make me want to watch Barb and Star again, too.
Well, yeah. I really want...
I think about Barb and Star a lot.
Me, too. And I really want somebody to... I want it to play theatrically in Los Angeles because I want to watch that with a crowded theater.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That is a movie. It's not... Like, there are movies that I want to see projected because of the cinematography or whatever. That, I just want to see it for the collective audience experience. That's the kind of comedy you want to see in a full theater.
I agree with you on
when
that.
When theaters can be full again.
Love Barb and Star. Well, in Los Angeles, it's going to be next week.
I believe so.
It's the 8th today.
June 15th is supposed to be the day.
Day after my 57th birthday, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Happy birthday to me.
To Dave.
The 15th, they're opening everything.
Yeah.
No capacity restrictions. You can go eat in a restaurant. You know.
All right.
I'm vaccinated, so I'm going to venture forth boldly.
Lionsgate,
into
please
the world.
Put Barb and Star.
Yeah, we want Barb and Star
theater.
Back into a movie theater,
even if it's just a one-off.
We got some letters.
We have a letter. A five-star review. Listen, leave us a five-star review.
All right, here's
and
the letter.
And we'll read it on the air, like we're about to do with this one at some point.
Aaron says, I want them to film The Starlight Barking, which was Dodie Smith's sequel to the 101 Dalmatians novel, in which every human on Earth falls under a magical sleep. The dogs fly to Sirius, the dog star, and space dogs try to convince them to abandon Earth. I did not dream this. It is real. Look it up.
Disney wouldn't dare.
Wouldn't
it does
they?
Sound, I don't
Why
know.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, for one
it would
thing,
have to be animated. But,
well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, Cruella would be asleep, so like that can't be the sequel.
Oh, good. Listen, we don't need Cruella all the time.
I know, but they've announced a Cruella 2 is happening. So,
well, of course they did. But they can do this, too.
Sure, why not? Hey, before we get to the five-star review, a quick reminder that we have a Patreon. At patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yes.
Starting for as little as a dollar a month, you get... lots of amazing new content. You get extra stuff like daily recommendations from us, LKRX. You get Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, where we take a 20 or 30 minute deep dive into one individual film of varying vintage. LKTV, a podcast of the television. Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics.
Yep.
Linoleum Nights, where we talk about various and sundry topics and we work blue. And there's monthly club meetings.
We literally paint ourselves blue.
Yes, we're the blue men. We have monthly club meetings where we watch a movie online streaming.
You know, younger people don't really understand what the expression work blue means.
Ah.
You do know that, right?
I suppose, but you know, I talk like an 80-year-old.
I know you do.
In the olden days, they would talk about certain comedians. Like if you went to the 10 o'clock show as opposed to the 8 o'clock show, they'd be...
You got the dirty material.
They'd be working blue. They'd be their adults only stuff. So that's what that... I don't know where that expression
Linoleum
means.
Linoleum Nights is the adults only show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We stream a movie every month with members and chat about it in Discord. All kinds of things. So, you know, if you like this and want more of this, then go to patreon.com/linoleumknife and... maybe you like the show as much as this wonderful person who left us a five-star review.
KCHNC.
Okay.
That's the name of the person. Says, recommended to me a couple of years ago as a movie and food lover. I had already been a fan of What the Flick.
Oh, thanks.
I love Dave and Alonzo's sweet and genuine dynamic and their timely insights about culture and art. Also, As a native Texan and a teacher, I love Dave and Alonzo's consideration of geography and education as well. Always interesting and fun.
Well, thank you, KCHNC.
I'm super into geography.
Yes, you're a veritable Carmen Sandiego.
I can name many of the states in the United States. There are some box-shaped ones that I get confused.
I have never been able to do that parlor trick where you can sit down and identify all 50 states on a map.
I try.
Can't do it. I'm good at the capitals, though. Those got drummed into me in third grade.
Right. Did your dad quiz you at dinner about the capitals of the states? Of course he did.
The dad in the disciple is so like my dad, where this kid's like, my friends, we're going to go play cricket. And they're like, no, let me tell you more about this obscure branch of music that I'm going to teach you how to play.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's us then. Check out our friends on the internet. Well, first of all, please check out my other podcasts. Go listen to Breakfast All Day.
Correct.
Maximum Film, which is our new title for the show formerly known as Who Shot You.
It is no longer called Who Shot You. It is called Maximum Film.
That's right. And check out the last two episodes of A Film and a Movie. We are going out with a bang. This week, we're dropping our interview with Guinevere Turner, where she explains how Blake Edwards' terrible 1991 farce Switch was instrumental in the making of her breakthrough film Go Fish in 1994. Mm-hmm. And then next week, Dan and I have a nice sit down with Edgar Wright about his new documentary, The Sparks Brothers.
Yes.
So we're sad to be ending A Film and a Movie, but we're very thrilled about these last two episodes.
Y'all existed for a year, but you had heavy hitters all the time.
Yeah.
As guests.
You know, if you haven't caught up, they're still sitting there to be enjoyed. I'm really proud of what we accomplished on that one. See what our friends are up to. Go check out what Bibbs and Whitney are doing at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out Dennis Enun with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Cinepunks, which Dave is going to be on shortly.
Oh, yeah. I recorded yesterday with Liam and Josh of the Cinepunks podcast, PUNX.
Yes.
And they invited me to come on and talk about Apichatpong, Where Is Seth Kuhn?
And I you'll said, go anywhere to I talk said, about Apichatpong.
Oh, yeah. So I got on there and we talked about Tropical Malady and we talked about Cemetery of Splendor. And I had a wonderful time. And I don't know when it drops.
Okay.
But soonish.
Yeah. Well, and we'll post it on our socials and stuff. Our socials are, incidentally, at LinoleumCast at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. Check out his work at Bandcamp, BLEU. And of course, you can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show like we did this week. You can also leave positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Google Play, Amazon Music, Stitcher, thelounge.com, you know, and so on and so on. I want to say, I left out Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, and Secretly Timid as other podcasts that you should absolutely check out. And Deck the Hallmark, of course, where I pop up on Mondays to talk about vintage non-Hallmark Christmas movies, because that's just how I roll. All right. Thanks, you guys. Have a good week. We will be back next time with more. And until then,
goodbye.